Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just when I'm honored to join us, we have talk guests every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the Talkshoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGemes. And of course, if you want to, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is Paul Franz. Just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. And of course, I have a secondary account called FranzGames where I announce this podcast and various news and about Franz Games and client updates. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. This week was steady work on the current project. Steve Cole was released from the hospital and is resting from his second surgery. Obviously, keep him in your thoughts and your prayers. Both, you know, Leanna, Steve, and Gene all took time to visit him early in the week. And also, Steve Petrick was busy working on Capsule number 53 and also did the Platinum Hat Tree. Yay! We got that posted and we're waiting for results on that. Also, he did Zinti and the Gorn Master Starship books. He's continuing to work on those. Of course, Dean was busy working on Facebook and the BBS and the blog feed. She's taken over posting to the blog feed because Steve has been all indisposed because of the surgeries. Also, Jean released some what she calls game room decorations. Basically, there's some of the minis that they added little things that you can attach hooks to basically making them ornaments. You know, obviously you don't have to buy them super high quality if you don't want to, but they're available on Shapeways. So if you want a Christmas ornament, which is Starfleet Universe related, there's the place to go. Moving onward to the SFB Online tournaments, we have, of course, Rat 47 tournament run by Bill Schiller. Ted and Paul finally completed their game with Paul winning in the end. Now, we have Clayton Kruger who's waiting in the finals, and we have, Paul has to get through his semifinal round. Clayton is just sitting there waiting for his finals opponent. When it comes to the World League, a little bit of progress on the Sleepy Cat versus Asmerdin game. They've gotten all the way to 3.8. GBS currently, that's Asmerdin's ship, is currently running from various Zinni drones, includes some of the fast drones that Zinni has launched from his ship. The Platinum Hat Tree is posted and currently waiting for people to start play. Me and my opponent were supposed to play Tuesday and he brain farted. So we'll figure out another time when we actually will be able to get together and play. I will email him a little bit later this evening. When it comes to library, not much progress there. There's been no... I haven't got anything from people. Though I know when I was online, one of them did mention that he was going to be sending some stuff in, which were mainly corrections. I've actually posted a few corrections myself to fix some minor issues with shields. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight... well, it's just me and Dave. Hey, Dave. in the chat room. So it might be, hopefully other people will be joining us later. And if they don't, well, that's the way it is. Tonight, actually, it is going to be a rather, it could be a fairly short night, it could be a fairly long night, all depends on how we go down this path tonight. But anyway, one thing that I plan on doing for actually next week is a Christmas, my yearly Christmas special when it comes to having ideas for Christmas gifts and so forth. So if you have any of your own ideas and you're listening to this, please send me an email at sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. And I'll be happy to tell other people about it. It can be Starfleet Universe related. At the very least, it needs to be game related. So that, you know, we can keep with the theme. Because Lord knows, I have one of the things that I have recommended each year is, of course, dice. But, you know, I want to, hopefully we can come up with some new, fresh ideas this year than we have in the past. And people will be quite excited about some of those ideas. Obviously, there will be some repeats, I'm sure, including subscriptions to SFB Online or FedCom Online. Hey, big surprise. But other ideas, please. You know, I'll be working on, I'll endeavor to work on them this week. And also, I'm hoping to hear some from you. Now, for this evening, I decided to go a little bit off the trail, which is that obviously one of the big things that Star Trek, you know, if you compare Star Trek to Star Wars, the travel of speed, you know, how the starships travel between systems is quite a bit different. In Star Trek, it's always been that, you know, you have, or at least, sorry, Starfleet, it's always been the way you went from point A to point B, is you go what's called strategic warp, which is basically this ultra-fast warp versus tactical warp. I think it's like warp 9 or something. I forget the exact what it's considered in the Star Trek universe. Now, the one thing I thought of was that what would happen if that was not the case? Because Lord knows that tactical warp, and it was a critical thing for fighting, you know, tactical battles. Because just look at the Romulans and how Romulans didn't get tactical warp for quite a bit of time. And though they had these really powerful weapons, i.e. the Plasma R, which is a pretty powerful weapon. I think everyone will agree with that. That, you know, even given that, they were able to stave off the Romulans. And why would that? I'm sorry, not the Romulans. Romulans were able to stave off the Gorns. And protect their planets, even though the Gorns had tactical warp at that time, at least before the Romulans did. And the Gorns didn't just overrun them, you know, because of how fast they had much faster ships. And obviously, that case is when you're fighting over a fixed point. You don't really need, I mean, from a defender's point of view, you don't need to be nearly as fast as your opponent, because obviously your opponent needs to be faster than you to get around you and to attack the site that they want to attack. Now, the one thing I didn't want to talk about, as I said, it was not the tactical situation, but more the strategic situation. Which is, if we didn't use strategic high, you know, basically high warp, strategic warp, where basically the ship was still in, I guess, but I want to say like real space, versus the whole idea was like Star Wars where it's hyperspace. In hyperspace, you know, you didn't know that you couldn't detect, at least to my knowledge, I've never seen it ever mentioned in Star Wars, the whole idea that you actually know when a ship in hyperspace flies near your planet. You don't. Though there was one where it actually, there was a weapon that actually pulled ships out of hyperspace, which was an interesting idea, I think. But overall, you know, you could fly by and be none the wiser because of your actually were in hyperspace. Now, the strategic warp where you're still kind of staying in real space and you can, and your enemy can detect you. They know where you are in real space. So they can see you moving from point A to point B. They can actually see it. And the question is, what would happen if that was not the case? If not that everyone would have like cloaking, so they can move at strategic warp. But if it didn't have strategic warp, obviously it'd be a different universe. To a certain degree. Because as anyone who's watched Star Trek at all, you know, the TV series, I'm blanking on the series, Deep Space Nine, that's it, where there's actually a wormhole, which you go from basically kind of one end of the galaxy to another end of the galaxy, or I'm not exactly sure the distances involved, but these great distances between the Dominion and where the Dominion are located and where the Federation is located. And you have this wormhole, which you were able to go through and actually traverse a great deal of space. Now, what would happen if that was the normal mode of transportation? Whether it is via wormholes or warp gates. The whole idea, you know, with Starfleet Warlord is you have warp gates. Though warp gates are mainly designed as a delivery mechanism for ships. The whole idea is that a warp gate is deliver ships from the Milky Way to the LMC. Now, what would happen if you actually used warp gates to actually go from point A to point B? You know, that was one way that you travel strategically. Obviously, that changes completely changes the dynamic of the universe. Because in the case of if you did everything using warp gates and you didn't do it through going strategic warp, that what really changes in that case is that now you have these fixed points, or even if it was these wormholes, where it would allow you to kind of bypass a lot of the physical space and go from one part of the galaxy to another part of the galaxy, or And what the thing that actually does is that it then has fixed points that you are protecting. Blackfoot Pass, I think is what I'm thinking of. Yeah, Blackfoot Pass, where you have this very narrow passage through this asteroid field. Now, let's be realistic here, guys. When it comes to Blackfoot Pass. Blackfoot Pass overall is a... I was going to say anomaly, but that's not exactly what I'm thinking. It is an anomaly. But it's kind of applying 2D to a 3D universe to a certain degree. Because if you can get around it, but I'm assuming that when it comes to the Blackfoot Pass of, you know, Starfield Universe fame, that hole through the asteroid field that separated, you know, on two sides of the space, that, you know, that the asteroids were, when it comes to three dimensions, went so far up and so far down that it basically formed a wall. In theory, you can go around it. It just takes longer. So, you know, it's like, what's a good example of the same thing? Oh, obviously, what am I thinking of? The Panama Canal. Panama Canal obviously gets you from the Pacific Coast to the Atlantic Coast, or Atlantic Coast to the Pacific Coast very quickly, versus going around, I forgot the Cape. I forget what the Cape is called on the end of South America. I forget what that's called. But anyhow, the whole idea is that it saves a lot of time. So you can quickly attack your opponent. Now, that's why, you know, in the case of the Star of the Universe, they have bases on either end of the Blackfoot Pass. And given that, you know, if we switch to using wormholes and warp gates as your primary method of traveling at high speed between different parts of the galaxy, instead of the whole thing with strategic warp, then you have these fixed points which you have to guard. I'm thinking about of another sci-fi. Crud. But basically, they had the same idea, where there wasn't that they had warp gates or wormholes, but they had specific locations located in a solar, in each solar system, which were kind of considered cleared lanes, so you could arrive there without any issues. But, you know, and with that, what would happen is that people would actually, the whole idea of that sci-fi is, one thing would happen is that people would reinforce those locations. So the whole idea of that is reinforcing those locations, so that basically you have these fortresses at the warp gates, at those locations within the solar systems. So anything that came through, you just fire at it as it came through, you know, unless, you know, as a, you know, friend or foe kind of beacon become kind of critical at that point. Because of, you want to immediately attack anything that's a foe, because otherwise, well, that's their entry point. They've got to the breach. Now, if warp gates are the only, let's say the warp gates, because warp gates produce I consider it a very interesting idea. Which is, if you have a warp gate, that means it can be destroyed. It's man-made, unlike a wormhole, which cannot be destroyed. In theory, you probably could by some mechanism, but overall, you couldn't do that. Let's say that you can't modify actual space so much that it actually would close a wormhole. It's possible that you can I just don't know how you would do it, but I'm not sure in when it comes to current physics that wormholes actually exist, you know, because I'm not exactly sure what kind of phenomenon they'd be considered, because we have black holes, and where are wormholes kind of like black holes to a certain degree, or near black holes, or, you know, what exactly is it? Are they? But getting back to where, you know, if you have a warp gauge, you actually can destroy them. Now, here's the thing, that one way of cutting off a solar system from being attacked, obviously, is you can destroy the warp gate. But of course, it's one of those things that you can cut off, you know, you notice despite your face kind of thing. The whole idea being that if you destroy the warp gate, you're cutting off yourselves from commerce. You know, and because I'm willing to bet that most planets cannot survive without commerce of some sort, you know, especially colonies. You know, you might be able to create enough industry, or at the very least, you know, when it comes to the most important thing, which is food and shelter, on a foreign world, you know. Now, then we have the whole issue of course, communication, because that's one of those things that always is kind of an interesting thing, which is, I know that there's this one sci-fi book, I forget the name of it right now. I think it was the Black Fleet series. I think I got that right. Where there was no such thing as instantaneous communication. What communication was you have these drones, which you'd have put a information packet in the drone, and then you have these automated systems at these different warp gates. Good to see Redskins actually scored. And then the whole idea was that you had these automated platforms where basically you have drones come and relay information. And you'd bring drone to that station. Then, okay, if a packet had to be disseminated to everybody, then, okay, you have multiple drones be launched at different locations from that platform. Now, again, the critical thing there is that there was no instantaneous communication, which in our day and age of the cell phone, the whole concept of non-instantaneous communication, it seems like a foreign concept. But that's one of the things that it comes to mind, because I was actually listening to this one podcast where Daniel Grahams, you know, one of the actual authors for the pseudonym James S. A. Corey, you know, the creators of the Expanse series, and one of the things that the Expanse kind of shows or remind us is that we're communicating via light, which is pretty fast. If you're communicating with a ship from Earth to a ship that's, say, in Saturn, that's 20 minutes it takes for light to travel from Earth to Saturn. So in that case, any information that you get back from Saturn is already 20 minutes old. So, you know, if you find out something, some kind of information, that information is already 20 minutes old. And then if you react to it, by the time you react to it, you know, if it was a battle, the battle's already might be done, you know. Yeah, Mike, that might be a good example. Mike Benno's thing that sounds like packet data transfer with ham radio, where, you know, things aren't instantaneous, which in my mind, instantaneous communication across the galaxy is unrealistic in my mind. Actually, that was one thing I was thinking about, which was when it comes to Star Wars, the whole idea of, you know, I'm sure if anybody has watched enough of the Star Wars Clone Wars series, which was, it's, you know, an animated series. But one of the things that they constantly are doing is that they're communicating instantaneously across the galaxy. Now, in my mind, the only way to do that, in theory, would be to actually kind of have a satellite system where you create those higher speed communication through hyperspace. And then on the other end, you have, you know, it creates kind of a hole into hyperspace, and that's how you communicate instantaneously. So, which, again, might not be realistic, but, you know, it's like, how, you know, sci-fi hand-waving kind of thing, which is, in my mind, is that's fine. But it might be, in my mind, unrealistic, just like the whole idea with communicating with Starfleet, you know, with Star Trek, you know, that's not instantaneous. You know, I have a hard time believing the communication. How does that work? You know, you have communication over high warp. How do you do that? You know, of course, they have, when it comes to Starfleet universe, you got these weapons, you know, like the plasma weapons, which are going a tactical warp. How is that weapon forming a warp bubble to be able to fly at warp speeds? You got me. Because, especially when it comes to plasma, the plasma isn't, it's plasma. It's not actually a physical object. Maybe there's some certain property of plasma that, of a plasma torpedo that actually allows that, you know, but to me, it still seems strange. It's easier to believe like drones and them actually working with tactical warp because of their a physical device that are flying around, you know, space. Did not know that. Mike was mentioning that in Star Trek, in some Star Trek episodes, permission from Starfleet Command was received after Kirk took action. He just happened to be right. which is interesting. But so that's, you know, that you know, with warp gates and wormholes presents a whole different tactical situation when it comes to the Starfleet to the Starfleet universe. Now, obviously, if things don't change that drastically, they change significantly, but not drastically. If Star Trek ships travel through space along the lines of Star Wars with hyperspace, because the only big difference, as I mentioned earlier, is that the ship, you couldn't see the ships flying by your solar system, which is a good thing, you know. So that's one thing that definitely changes the whole idea of systems, you know, a row of systems being like a line, you know, a battle line, you know, your own territory up to this point, and then you're fighting, and if you get past it, you know, then, well, you're doomed. The Starfleet universe kind of has the same way, where you actually can go, yeah. Not sure, Mike, what the difference between hyperspace and subspace are. But actually, in Starfleet universe, you actually can fly at high speed past the bases. The problem is not flying past those bases at high speed. It's what you do after that happens. You know, you can surprise them, but, you know, obviously, if they know you're coming, then they can also fly at high speed to intercept you, basically. But in hyperspace, my understanding is that unless you're in the same spot in hyperspace at the same time, which is very doubtful, because I never remember anyone actually, you never see ships passing in hyperspace in Star Wars. Now, that might just be a hand wave them kind of thing, or there might be considered some kind of scientific principle that Star Wars uses that, you know, allows for that. Now, so, you know, makes things interesting in that case. Now, I was going to think about, say that, you know, what happens if the ships no longer have tactical warp. Actually, in that case, you definitely have Star Wars, because the way I understand for Star Wars is that Star Wars, you have to fly in hyperspace really close to the planet. And then when you enter real space, then you're using, you know, relativistic speeds, you know. Yeah. But it's just interesting, Mike, that you say that, because obviously that's the way the Romulans originally were set up. Mike said, is saying that, you know, things would have been much simpler if SFB had been set up to have combat at sublight and used warp speed only as a means to move between star systems. I agree. Which, of course, the thing is, what does that make it? That makes it Star Wars. Is what it does, really. Which I think, again, it's an interesting concept. With that, I think we will move on to the next topic for this evening. Don't mind me. I am... yes. The next topic for this evening actually is what I call winning the hat. Now, I'm not going to discuss, you know, how do you win the platinum hat. You have to be a pretty darn good player to win the platinum hat tournament. That is just a fact of life. Now, okay, no, he didn't have it there. Sorry. There it is. Okay. sorry, there's a portion where Patrick added David Yonke late. He looks like he updated the discussion board post, but he did not send me an updated email. That's why I had a issue with that. What I actually wanted to discuss here overall was ships. Basically, what ships to fly when it comes to the Platinum Hat tournament. And what would be best... Okay, what ships are going to have the best chance of winning? Not necessarily the players involved, because obviously we have some really good players involved in the Platinum Hat tournament. We have like Lee Graves. We have Peter Bakia. Some other ones that are really good. Lynn Hunsicker. Ken Lynn. And Brian Evans. Those are, I consider those guys, I think Ron Brimeyer. Those are the people I currently consider kind of the top players in the Platinum Hat tournament. I don't consider myself a top player because I don't play nearly enough. And of course, what is the Andromedan flying? He's flying the Celtorian. Big surprise. Actually, it's not the biggest surprise because anyone who's actually followed what ships I actually fly, for a while there, there was only two ships I would fly. I fly the Andromeda and I fly the Sartorian. And, you know, just because of, I thought it was fair and I liked the ships. To me, the Sartorian, again, is going to be an interesting one because let me see who I'm facing. I'm facing a very strange opponent, Robert Croyer. And he's flying the Wax with five Phaser Ones. So what he's going to be flying is with a total of 9 Phaser Ones and 4 Drone Racks and 3 Phaser Threes. Yeah, 3 Phaser Threes. Because he had one which is rear extended and 2 which are 360. Now, as I mentioned to who I mentioned to, I forgot who I mentioned to. I was on SFB Online. We were discussing things, and one thing I like about the Sartorian is that it has no seeking weapons. One of the things I hate about the Sartorian is that it has no seeking weapons. So, you know, I'm sure you can agree with both because of obviously. Without seeking weapons, the Sartorian is easier to play. It's a little more of a challenge, but it's easier to play because you don't have to track all of those seeking weapons. But when it comes to the as a double-edged sword, i.e., if you don't have the seeking weapons, now you don't have anything to throw at your opponent when you can just kind of throw it at it and you can run the opposite direction. And therefore, form a kind of a terrain that your opponent is going to have to face in some way, sometime, somewhere. At the very least, even if it never hits them, it will definitely modify their course. You know, that's the whole idea of seeking weapons. In my mind, is to use them as mobile terrain. Now, the ships that currently are involved in the Platinum Tournament is, of course, you have the Gorn, which quite a few people are playing. The Ramin FH. You got the Fed. You got the Zinti. You got the Wax. You got the Orion. You have the GBS. You have one brave soul in my mind. is Brian Evans and LDR. Let me just mention about the LDR, because the funny part in my mind when it comes to the LDR doesn't do nearly as well as you would expect it to do. Because I think in my mind, the issue is that you have the LDR, which has the phaser Gs, but it has two-third movement ship. Which because of you're flying it with disruptors, you have less total power available to use to, you know, in firing your weapons. And I think that's the big issue there, and why it doesn't do nearly as well as you would expect it to. We actually have a regular Lyran. And let's see. Oh, we actually have a Hydran too, which is going to be interesting. And an Archaeotholing, which is old school. Big surprise. I.e. Kenlan. Of all of them, let me just look at. I'm going to do a quick glance of the ships. Just given the lineups of the ships versus ships, not the players involved again, but the ships versus ships. We've got the Federation versus Zinni, which I think the Zinni has definitely an advantage in that matchup. Then you have the Wax versus Saltorian. I think the Wax has an advantage just because of the Saltorian can chase him all he wants. He can chase him. The Saltorian can chase him all he wants. But, you know, he's going to have to just be beating down drones. Now, the good thing about that, about the Saltorian versus the Wax, is that the Wax can only launch four, at least that one, can only launch four drones per turn. That means that the Saturnian should be able to keep up with knocking down the drones. And now the tough part is going to be with the wind. Is that if the Saturnian is following the Wax, you know, the wind auxiliary determined battle cruiser, that it, you know, can fire at the very least five, if not six, phaser ones per turn. That's just when you're following. Now, if you're hitting it dead on, then it can hit you with a minimum of seven, a maximum of eight. Why did I think I had nine? I don't know. I went off the deep end on that one. Sorry. Actually, I missed an INC. That's actually facing an Orion. I think the Orion has definitely a leg up on that. And they have Federation versus GBS, which I think the Federation has a leg up in that category. Lyran versus Orion, that's a tough one because of. That's going to be a close one, especially with the Orion, with the matchup it's got, which is it has two packages, one which is three plasma Fs and two fusions. You know, fusion on the left side, fusion on the right. Actually, that is not quite right. If I recall correctly, the fusions are left side, right side. They are, I have to double check when it comes to the tournament, but I think they are actually right front, right, and left front, left. Which is not quite LS and RS category. And the other package is two Hellbores, a Phaser G, a Phaser 1, and a drone, which my guess against the Lyran, that's most probably what he's going to select. Now, obviously, the Orion can use the Hellbores just to knock down the ESG. Most probably he'll try to hit the ship and not the ESG, which would make absolute sense. But I think the Orion has an overall leg up against Balearen. And then we have the Zinni versus the GBS. I think the Zinni has an advantage because of it's got both double weapon, you know, double seeking, and also it has the shuttle, the suicide shuttle, not the suicide shuttle, the scatter pack. Sorry, I got went off the deep end. Got Fed versus Gorn. That's actually an interesting one. I can go either way. Though, if I look at the players, you know, is Wingen Power versus Majid Farsi. And I think Majid Farsi has a heck of a lot more experience overall in flying Starfleet battles. So I think he has definitely the leg up in that category. We have the GBS versus the Hydran. The Hydran definitely has a leg up on that one. Now, overall, what ship do I think is going to win the tournament? Let me just look at this overall. Given the ships that are flying, but just look at the ships and don't look at the actual strength of the individual players. One more time. I think that the Zinti is going to win the Platinum Hat tournament. Just for the plain simple fact that I think it's the Zinti in the current category is a better overall ship, more flexible, has more, obviously it can knife fight. It's a knife fight where you're going, where you range to like range two. Yeah, it's a knife fight. I'm comparing knife. I'm confusing knife fight with the saber dance. Saber dance is longer range. So yeah, Zinni has a much better, I think, knife fighting capability. Just because, not because of it can turn, because it can't. Though turn mode C is not that bad. But I think the number of phases of threes it has, that's why it's a good knife fighter. Now, who in this inning do I think has the best chance of winning? I think in this inning, the best person that has best chance of winning is David Zinders. But we'll just have to wait and see when it comes to the actual strength of the players themselves, because that is probably going to define it a lot more than the ships. Though, obviously, I've always been of the opinion when it comes to ships and captains is that each captain are designed for certain ships. They best play with certain ships because of it more reflects their own ideas on tactics and their own personality overall. Because if they're very aggressive, you know, you're not going to win in the Saltorian. Or you're not going to, if you're really aggressive, you're not going to win in some of these ships. Think about, okay, an LDR is a good example of that. You don't always want to be aggressive because of you got one of your weapons is an ESGs, which are those power sucks, you know. So, you know, in that case, when you're recharging, you might be actually have to delay attacking your opponent just to recharge your ESGs. Because otherwise you're going to be moving very, very slowly, which is not what you want. Okay. Don't mind me. I'm just actually seeing there actually was some play that had occurred. The ISC seems to be down 21 internal, 16 power. That's a lot of power. two EMER, one probe, a transporter, and a phase three, which is an interesting way of damage, interesting damage allocation, because how can you get that much power? It just does not seem right. I'll have to reread the actual post. There's actually a post when it comes from Dana Madsen, which is, you know, the Orion versus the ISC. It goes to not quite blow by blow, but it gives you a good idea, a good sense for the actual game itself. So, playing that tournament is going to be actually quite interesting, especially because I'll be getting into it with Saltorian. And when it comes to my tactics, there are two kinds of tactics I use, because you can't always be aggressive. One is to be very aggressive, forego the whole idea of charging a wild weasel and just attack your opponent. You know, because I've actually done a very aggressive fighting against a Romulan that cost me the game, which is because I was knife fighting a Romulan, which fully with all the plasma that he had, you know, I couldn't avoid the plasma. Though, to be honest, I didn't do too badly in my mind, just because of I got the plasma torpedoes to hit multiple shields, so my shields were really low, but you know, at least they were still up. As I said, you know, I still lost. But you know, another one, obviously, there's, you know, high speed, which means don't charge the PCs all the way, and then there is the slower ones, which was charge the PCs all of the way and then back off, you know, when it comes to the speed. And in which case, if you're going to do that, then you're probably going to want to have wild weasels available at that point. Now, there's always the most critical question in my mind when it comes to wild weasels, which is, do you forgo suicide shuttles and have it so only two, and then, okay, forgo doing suicide shuttles, doing wild weasels for suicide shuttles, and then basically charge your wild weasels? Because, come on, let's be realistic. Most probably, you're not going to need wild weasels on your first turn. You can in theory, but if you need wild weasels on your first turn, you're being just a little too aggressive in my mind. I.e., both you and your opponent are closing as quickly as possible. Why are you doing that? You don't need to do that, and that's why I don't. But when it comes to Saltorium, you can go for a higher speed, slower speed, and charge everything. Or you can go for a higher speed and you'll charge only like 3 points, so you have a standard load available to you. Which makes an interesting problem. But then you can go faster. You can charge your suicide shuttles. And if you want to, you can charge your wild weasels too. And if your opponent is going at a high rate of speed and closing on you, instead of going directly into the middle of the board, you know, I'm not gonna say do a corner dodge, because that's not quite what I mean. But you know, angle yourself towards the corner so that rate of closure is very, very it's much smaller than normally it would be. So, you know, overall, you know, I like the Saltorian. You know, it's a kind of a quirky ship. One of the things I really like about the Centurion overall is the PCs. The PCs are a neat thing in that they're kind of like disruptors in that they can fire either overloaded or standard on the same, you know, without, you know, having to wait a tremendous amount. But the one of the things that's really cool in my mind is that, let's say, you can have it so it's charged for overloaded, but you don't have to fire as overloaded because of that capacitor. You actually can fire as a standard load, and then you have more power left in your capacitor. Which I think is quite cool. Obviously, you have the shield crackers and the web breakers, which are always cool when you're facing a falling of the opponent, because it's one of the few times where the falling of the opponent might not actually use the web caster for casting a web, might actually just use it for as a web bolt in that case. I think I'll close up with that for this evening. Nice little shorter than most, but we definitely got to discuss some interesting topics, including the discussion of what would happen if Star Trek didn't use strategic warp, that they used other methodology for getting a ship from point A to point B. And, of course, talk about the Platinum Hat tournament, which is right now going on, and what ships, I think, going to win it. Ignoring the actual strength of the players in the tournament, which should be interesting to see how that all turns out. You know, will my predictions come true? Or am I just, like, the players are so strong that David Zindars has no chance to win. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.